Many of the women I've interviewed for this podcast have talked about going overseas as part of their STEM journeys. Working in different environments, different countries, and gaining experience that they may not have been able to get by staying home in Australia. This episode's woman in STEM is someone who is in the middle of this part of her journey. Dr. Natalie Matosin is a postdoctoral fellow at the Max Planck Institute of Psychiatry in Munich, where she's studying the effects of stress on illnesses such as schizophrenia and PTSD. But while her journey may have taken her to Germany and Munich, let's find out how it started.
So as a child, I guess I've always had an interest in science, and the main reason is because of my dad. Mm-hmm. So my father is both my parents are blue collar workers, so I don't come from a family of professionals or people that have been to university. I'm the first in my family. And and my dad, when I was a kid, he just loves anything to do with science and biology and animals. He's a huge animal enthusiast. And so when we were kids, he often used to take my brother. He's a few years older than I am. So he used to take both of us out into the bush, and we used to go walking and play in the creeks and kind of like catch animals and just observe the wildlife. Mm-hmm. And so I suppose I always had this interest in nature and science and anything that was, I guess, tangible. Like, we were always working with our hands and getting dirty and just in the outdoors. And I guess as well, because my dad has this huge passion for nature and for science, then it was really contagious. And so my brother and I were also interested or became interested in it as well. And then as I got older, I guess, like all young people that are, you know, interested in something, then I was good at science when I was at school because I was really interested in it. And then, I guess, as I was saying, like all people that are good at science, they kind of get encouraged to go into medicine. And so for a long time, that was what I wanted to do. I wanted to be a doctor. But as I went through my university studies, I realized that actually I didn't want to be a doctor. What I wanted to do was research. I wanted to discover things, and I wanted to find cures for diseases, which I know sounds really romantic, and it's not like that at all in reality. Mm-hmm. But that was what I was the most passionate about and most interested in, and I guess that's how I ended up here.
So you didn't want to be getting, so you wanted to find cures for diseases. You wanted to do more research. What did you see as incompatible with that as from doing medicine? I don't think my English works well, but I think the question.
Yeah, I understand the question. So I guess with like my idea of being a doctor was that, I mean, I think like most scientists and people in the medical field, we have this innate desire to better people's lives. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, we want to contribute, we want to help people. And the difference that I saw between being a researcher and being a medical doctor was that if I became a doctor, I would be helping people every day, definitely, but I would be using treatments that were already available. Whereas what I wanted to do was to find new ways to treat patients that that we don't already know about. So there's still, I guess, just very generally in medicine, there's still many, many diseases and disorders and conditions that we don't have treatments for. And actually, mental health conditions are probably among the most, badly treated diseases and conditions in the world. So there are already medications and treatments for these patients, but they're lacking. They're not the best. They're not as good as they could be.
So it's a greenfield experience. Rather than following in others' footsteps, you could be the first person to make this discovery.
That's right. So it was, to me, it was about, it was kind of about, you know, discovering, or I guess, yeah, I guess that's true. Just discovering things that we don't already know, or just thinking about illness and disorders in a different way that would enable us to find new treatments that would help patients a lot more than what they've been, you know, helped in the past.
Now, what is it about brain-based disorders that it interests you so much?
So the brain, I guess, is just, it's interesting for everyone, I think. The brain is the, it's what makes us who we are. It's the most complex organ in the body. It's so intriguing. You know, you can change one little thing within the brain and it has huge consequences. And then you can change other things and it has no consequences. Our bodies or our brains are able to just recover. I think it's a really, really interesting organ. Yeah, it's just complex. It's complex and we know so little about it. And I just think it's super interesting, at least to me.
Why? What was it? So you got into the brain. What attracted you to schizophrenia and those other sort of disorders that as a problem to be solved?
So my interest in mental health conditions was in one way very organic. The main reason that I got involved in this area of research is because where I did my PhD at the University of Wollongong, there was a big neuroscience group there, mm-hmm. and they were very focused on schizophrenia research. And so that's how it all started. But in saying that, I also have my own interest in mental health conditions, because I'm realizing that they affect practically everybody in the world. So at the moment, I think the statistics stand that about 1 in 5 people experience some kind of mental health condition, whether it be depression, schizophrenia, bipolar disorder, anxiety. It could be an eating disorder, anything along those lines, autism. You know, 1 in 5 people are affected. And so basically that means that no matter who you are, even if you're not affected, you're likely going to know somebody who is. And the treatments for these types of disorders are not very good. People that are treated, so that take medication and stick to their medication, they have much better prognosis than people who do not. But the part of the reason why people don't take medication is because they have really severe side effects and it makes them feel terrible. And so the illness makes them feel terrible. The medication makes them feel terrible. And a lot of these people, they don't really have options. Mm. And I think that's really sad. And so, you know, I really think that something needs to be done about it. And that's, I guess, my drive, or yeah, I suppose my drive for being in this field and pursuing this career.
Now, you've risen pretty fast, it may be said. You're in the top 30 under 30 for Forbes in medicine in Europe. But what's your experience been like being a young female researcher in a discipline that's traditionally male-dominated?
Yeah, so this is a big issue facing young researchers at the moment. So specifically with regards to being a female, it's in some ways it's difficult. There are still a lot of prejudices that affect us. So just one example is that, you know, when we look up for role models, that the majority of professors and people in higher positions, they're all male. And so I guess in some unspoken way, it's not very encouraging, because it kind of makes you feel, I guess, even in a subliminal way or a subconscious way, that it's not possible to make it the whole way. And I think that things are changing now and it's definitely getting better. I've had actually all my mentors have been female and they've been incredible role models and very supportive, and I think that's been very important for me.
Mm-hmm.
So that's one aspect, but I suppose in another aspect, which is just the idea of being, or the issue of being a young person in science. So this is something that I like to kind of talk about on social media a lot. So I blog about it and I often talk about it on Twitter. And what I find in science is that because experience is something which is valued, so is publications, collaborations, funding. They're all things that only come once you've been in the field for a long time. And so something that I felt a lot is that even though as a young person I have a lot to bring to the table, I don't feel like it's valued. And part of that is because of the metrics. So the way that scientists are valued is all these things that take a long time to acquire. And I think that as a young person, sometimes it's difficult because you're constantly feeling like you're not good enough. And even when you're trying really hard, you're not being rewarded for the types of things that you have to offer.
So you're currently sitting in not so sunny Munich at the moment. Now you're at the Max Planck Institute of Psychiatry. Now this is Max Planck has a whole cachet around different sciences. How did you get there?
So during my PhD studies at Wollongong, we had a really exceptional postdoc in our lab who had done her training at the Max Planck. And during my conversations with her, and also I guess just realizing that in order to make it in medical research, it would be really beneficial to have some overseas experience. Mm-hmm. I guess that's a whole other topic for us to talk about. But her name's Lisa. She's a good friend of mine still, Lisa Frank, and she's based here in Munich. And, she was a senior postdoc in my lab at the time. And so I had a chat with her and said, I really want to go overseas. Do you have any connections? And she told me about this institute. And to be honest, like I was very young and naive and I had no idea kind of, who they were or what they did or even how prestigious they were. And I just thought, Munich sounds good. It sounds like a nice place. She sold it to me really well. And then I kind of came here to do an internship while I was still a student. And and then I just fell in love with it. There were so many things about it that I thought were fantastic. I mean, like it's one of the very few places in the world where it's exceptionally well-funded. And and it's just a great team, a great environment, super productive, but also super supportive. And and I knew that was all these things together were very unique. And I decided that I definitely wanted to come back here to continue training.
How are you finding the differences between working in Europe, Germany especially, and working and researching in Australia?
Very good question. I don't know. I mean, my experience at a Max Planck Society Institute, I guess, is going to be very different to maybe someone working at a different type of institute in Germany. I mean, a lot of things are still the same, but I guess the huge differences for me that I've noticed have more to do with my specific environment. So my mentor is the director of the institute. And of our department. And so I'm one of many, many postdocs and many, many PhD students within a bigger network of scientists in general. Mm. And so I guess the things that are kind of different here is that I'm part of a much bigger group, which is really nice, but it's also challenging. Like when I arrived, I felt quite overwhelmed sometimes because I was just one of many, and I wasn't used to that because in Australia we tend to have much smaller research groups, and in a way we tend to be a little more isolated because of that. Whereas here, the whole institute is focused on stress research. So that's my focus now as well. Mm-hmm. And so, and so I guess that's very different to kind of have this institute where everyone is working on the same thing, the same molecules essentially, and kind of working as a very, very big team. I mean, I'm sure there are situations like this in Australia, for example, in cancer research institutes, that type of thing. But at least in mental health research, it's a little bit more unusual for that to be the case.
So how are you finding the wider? So have you had much experience in the wider academic scene in Europe?
No, I haven't, to be honest. One of the other huge differences is there's obviously cultural differences, mm-hmm. And a language barrier. So I don't know. I guess that this is in a way specific to me because I've come to a place where I don't speak the native language, mm-hmm. and so I guess in some ways I find it more difficult to interact in the academic circles in terms of being involved in like university and teaching and all that kind of stuff. I don't really have that opportunity here because a lot of the courses are still in German, mm. and I obviously don't speak German.
Do you speak any German yet?
Well, a little bit. I can order off the menu.
And the most important thing is you know you can ask where the toilet is.
Yeah, exactly. Things like that is all good. All good. I can ask for a beer and then I can ask where the bathroom is.
Excellent. That's a process. Yeah. So you've got the process down.
Yeah, exactly. But certainly not enough to have a complex conversation and not enough to be able to teach, especially not, you know, to have the technical vocabulary for science. Right, so I'm here with my husband and we are trying to learn. We when we first arrived, we went to an intense German course, but I think it was a little much for us in the beginning and it kind of turned us off. It was like 10 hours a week or something. And on top of starting a new job and just having moved across the other side of the world, I think after a few months of that, we had had enough. So we'd still like to learn, but, I suppose I don't really need it within my job and I'm trying to be very focused at the moment, you know, to make the most of this opportunity.
So where would you like to go from here? I mean, you're in the Max Planck Institute, so, you know, you've gone somewhere. But where would you like to go? Where would you like to move on to? What would your goal be?
So one of my major source of funding is actually from the Australian government. It's from the National Health and Medical Research Council. And it's a special fellowship. It's a biomedical overseas fellowship. It's called a CJ Martin. And basically, it gives me 4 years of salary. And part of the deal is that I can go overseas for 2 years, be trained internationally. And then the idea is that the two remaining years are back in Australia and I bring back my expertise to further medical research in Australia. So I've been here now for 10 or 11 months. And and then I guess in April next year, my overseas tenure is up and the plan is to come back to Australia. So in the next, I guess like where I want to go from here is definitely I want to come back home. I want to be back with my family and with my friends and also, you know, back in the Australian system for sure. It's been a great experience being overseas, but I kind of,
you're a bit homesick.
You know, I'm happy. Yeah, I'm not so much homesick, but like I see my future back in Australia. Mm-hmm. I don't see it overseas. And yes, homesick too.
So with you moving back and that presents you with a lot more opportunities for getting into teaching and everything else because you understand the language. Sure. What would you like to, this is the horrible question you get asked at job interviews. Where do you see yourself in 5 years, 10 years, that sort of thing?
Yeah, this is actually a really easy question for me because I love my job. So I'm hoping that when I come home within the next few years, I can get some major grant funding and I want to start my own lab. So that's basically my dream. In the next 5 years, like my 5-year plan, that's what I would love to do. Mm-hmm. is to start, I guess, getting the funding so that I can start to build my own lab and have my own people and direct my own research program.
Very cool. Very ambitious.
Thank you.
No, well, I'd just like to note as well, you were actually noted by Forbes as, what did Forbes call you? Top 30 under 30 something or other? Sorry, I don't have my notes with me at the time.
Yeah, no. Forbes have these, Forbes magazine is an entrepreneurial magazine, and they have these lists every year, which they release, where they have the 30 people under 30 years old that are, I suppose, they call us game changers and influencers and leaders. And there are all different lists. So, for example, there's like social media lists, like marketing, law, and I'm in the science and healthcare list for the Europe class this year, which was really nice surprise.
So thanks to Dr. Matosin for taking part. What I'm thinking of doing is actually, if she's agreeable, is doing a catch-up episode for when she comes back to Australia and just see how she's going. Well, that's episode 9 done and dusted, and we're almost halfway on our journey to 20 episodes. If you know of a woman in the science, technology, engineering, mathematics, and medical fields that you think would be a good fit, then please let me know by emailing james@angrybeanie.com. As always, the music for this episode is Coco Kerr by Texas Radio Fish and is licensed Creative Commons Attribution. Of course, you can find it at dig.ccmixter.org.